The Guardian.
Football every now and then. Today, Confederations Cup continues. We review the action like VAR, almost as speedy and very nearly as accurate. Also, under 21 European Championships and Ronaldo after tax evasion farrago in Spain. Is it really time to do one run? Yeah, to do one run. All that plus transfer talk, 60-minute matches and more in this Football Weekly Whatever. That's right. In no way post-season D-Mob happy. Simon Burnton's here.
Yes.
All right, Simon. Also, Sasha Gurionov.
Good morning, James.
Are you well, Sasha?
I'm tremendous.
Great.
Good. Especially after last night at the Union Chapel.
Oh, yeah. Fun. Were you there?
Yeah, I came.
You didn't come and say hello?
No, I thought I'd see you here
all
today.
Right. So. It was a sweaty night.
No, not much AC there, was there?
Yeah. In some ways, there was a lot of AC.
Ah.
Yeah. And Barry Glendening's here as well.
Hello.
Barry, you've got to get off to do an Ascot blog.
Yeah, I'm wearing my top hat and tails.
Boom. You
which I
are.
Will be allowed to remove if the temperature goes over 30 degrees on the Queen's course.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Courtesy of an EU directive, I'm betting.
Well, a Royal Ascot directive.
Right.
We could have unprecedented scenes of depravity at the course today with men walking around just in their shirt sleeves.
That's disgusting.
Outrageous. What is the world coming to?
I genuinely do not know at this point. Anyway, hey, it's summer, quite yes. Literally, but the football rolls on relentless, Simon. How much have you been across the Confederations Cup?
I've watched one entire game.
Was it Portugal-Mexico?
No.
Oh.
Russia-New Zealand?
No.
Cameroon-Chile?
It was Cameroon-Chile,
all right. Yeah. And how was that for you?
It was an interesting game. The VAR was in full effect.
Right.
And I guess that's what people will be talking about from it.
I'll tell you what, one person who's talking about it, Valderez, just saw Sanchez's goal against Cameroon. What a cluster F. Even with technology, they're still getting it wrong. All right, so tell us what happened.
Okay, so the big incidents were that Cameroon scored a goal in the first half that the referee disallowed because of a pathetic kind of semi-foul on Vidal.
Hmm.
He blew his whistle immediately. There's a question of the time referees will take to get used to the fact that they have recourse to a television watching assistant. In this instance, a cross comes in from a set piece, a defender falls over. The referee should let play continue, see what transpires, and if there is a goal, then he can call it back and see if it should or shouldn't have been.
Mm.
In this instance, he immediately blew his whistle. The Cameroon player touched Vidal's shoulder. It was a brush of the fingers. I mean, it was never a free kick, never, ever a free kick. Anyway, the referee kind of just, he got that wrong. He used old-fashioned refereeing, and this is a new world. He hadn't really accepted that.
There's an adjustment time, I guess.
Yeah.
But in the previous game that day, the clash between Portugal and Mexico, once again, VAR was used, and it not entirely accurately.
Was it not? I mean, I thought
Portuguese goal.
Yeah,
Pepe was
offside in the build-up, so it shows us how far back they rolled the whole thing.
Right, but how far back can you go on this?
Well, they're supposed to be reviewing every major incident, like a goal. Every goal now gets reviewed.
Right.
Every red card, I think every penalty automatically gets reviewed. So they, I think, rolled back the whole move, presumably from the free kick, and saw that Pepe was offside.
You were watching, Sasha.
I was watching a little bit.
And how wrong did it feel?
It just feels that the moment has long gone. And then they go back. Oh, by the way, half a minute before that goal, a dude was offside.
And returning to Simon, your Cameroon-Chile game, then at the end, Chile's second goal, remind me who scored that?
Vargas,
after a lovely build-up from Alexis Sanchez. The players are celebrating, but then the referee calls it back for VAR?
So there were two Vargas-related incidents. The first one, he scored a goal and it was disallowed after consultation with the video assistant referee for offside. Now,
incorrectly disallowed, by the way.
Well, it depends how you judge the second one. I'm sure you'll get onto that.
So,
but it was right in the stroke of half-time.
This was an immensely close offside decision. On first viewing, to me, it looked just onside. When the replays were shown, it looked just onside. And when the freeze frame on the replay was shown, it still looked just onside.
Mm.
And when they drew a line on the freeze frame of the replay, there he was 6 inches offside.
Right.
Now, the question there is whether the video assistant referee is to be used to ensure that there are no kind of terrible refereeing errors,
mm-hmm.
or to enforce absolute perfection on all crucial decisions.
Right.
Anyway, it was eventually proven to be the correct decision, but it was close.
Right.
And then right at the end of the game, there was an attack that ended with Alexis Sanchez dancing around the goalkeeper, doing a bit more dancing, and then dancing a little bit more. And then after some further dancing, attempting a shot that was cleared, charged down by a defender, bounced back to Vargas, who popped it in.
Right.
Was it a goal? Was it not a goal?
Well, it was originally given as an offside, and then presumably they noticed, oh, it came off a defender. But the whole thing
And
just...
There were two defenders. So it was one of those where the striker is beyond the goalkeeper, but that there are... And often, anyone beyond a goalkeeper is immediately assumed to be offside, but there were two defenders.
But it just felt very wrong to see the players celebrating and then have this moment where it's all pulled back
and
everything's in limbo.
Both those two Vargas incidents came in the dying moments of stoppage time at the end of both halves.
Mm.
And both halves ended in extreme confusion with a delay of a couple of minutes. And then what was the referee deciding? Which way was it going? At halftime, the Chilean players were furious. They just had what they thought was a good goal disallowed. And then the match ended again in confusion and delayed celebration. It was it wasn't brilliantly handled.
There was also one thing, before Sanchez was dancing in the area, he was actually breaking away right on the line, and he looked more offside than Vargas was for the first one.
Right, so they didn't go back far enough that time. I think the thing, you mentioned this notion of whether it was going to be used to correct really glaring errors, or whether it's going to be brought in for every single thing. And it does seem they're leaning way more towards the latter. Barry, who could possibly have predicted that this might have somehow disrupted our enjoyment of the game of football?
Well, I find this just hilarious, because one of the main reasons those in favour of VAR or VAR put forward for its inclusion in the game was the fact that it would stop us talking about decisions. And clearly that's worked, because we spent the first 10 minutes of this pot. But I suppose we're not really talking about decisions. We're talking about VAR instead.
Yeah.
So that's something. Look, it when it was rolled in first, was it a game between France and Spain? It worked well twice. It's been an absolute farce in the Confederations Cup. I don't know, I'm not too sure how it worked out in the under-20 World Cup it was used in as well. But it clearly is suffering from very bad teething problems, and whether or not they can be rectified. You know, there's confusion over which decisions are justified and when they're justified. It's currently way too slow. And those, you know, a lot of people, and in some cases very sanctimoniously, criticised me for being against this and suggesting it wouldn't work, and those people seem to be very quiet at the moment.
There you go.
But you know, it may well work in the future. I don't think they're going to abandon it, but it certainly needs to be ironed out.
It's the purpose of using it in the Confederations Cup, which is essentially just a practice run. It's a pretend competition where the infrastructure of a World Cup gets tested, and they can play their games with VAR, and you know, it's the right place for it.
Right.
If it is still like this when the World Cup kicks off in a year's time, then that would be, you know, extremely regrettable.
I just think we should probably be experimenting a bit more with our coverage of the, you know, we could bring in all sorts of fancy new ideas and see if they work. And then if they do, because it's the Confederations Cup, no one's out there, are they?
Well, so, not many foreign visitors.
No.
There is only I think the Russians basically looked at the border controls, and apparently only 10,000 people arrived from abroad for the World Cup.
Wow.
For the Confederation Cup. And
that's
8,000.
What we have in this country, sort out immigration.
Exactly, fan IDs. 8,000 of them are from Chile, 1,500 of them are from Mexico, 170 Germans.
Really?
Not 170,000, 170 Germans, and pretty much no one else.
Oh.
And I think when they first looked at the stats, they went, ooh, maybe the head of the organising committee, Sorokin, might get in trouble for this. The following day, he gets elected onto the Russian Football Union executive. But I think the Russians are realising that basically the only people who came are Latin Americans and no one else, and they're a little bit puzzled. And having said that, because the Chileans and the Mexicans came in such numbers, the Russians are absolutely loving them, because obviously Chileans created quite a great atmosphere in Moscow, including to the extent that Chileans would be going up to the Russians going, aren't you excited about the tournament? And the Russians would be like, what tournament? And the Chileans are like, what is wrong with you? But on the other hand, in Kazan, I was reading sort of reports before the game, it sounded like the Mexicans took over the whole place. In fact, matter of fact, there was only about 1,500 of them, but they were very visible, they were very noisy, very loud, and everyone absolutely loved them.
Right, that's interesting. It's a reaction in Russia has been muted, but there's a kind of growing curiosity, is there?
Well, it's, I think if you look at the cities, so I think Kazan is going to get the best games and the best fans because Chile, Germany are going to be playing there. Sochi, the stadium yesterday was half empty and obviously hardly any visiting fans. St. Petersburg, unfortunately, has turned into a massive PR disaster because everyone is talking about how the stadium is still dreadful and bits are falling off inside and there is like building rubbish or like water leaking out the ceilings or lifts with random buttons that you don't really know which floor you're going to go to. Whereas in Moscow is currently full of building works. And so Kazan seems to be coming out of the first round of games smelling of roses and everyone else not so much.
Okay. All right. Is this a tournament? I'm trying to remember in the past. Is this a tournament that gets significant towards the end, like the semi-finals and final to people?
I think people tend to take an interest. You know, it wasn't in the Confederations Cup that Roberto Carlos scored his famous free kick?
Well, that was the tournoi.
That was Umbro Cup, wasn't it, 95?
No, it was the tournoi.
It was the tournoi, but it was essentially France, the same 97. Thing. It was a,
yeah, similar thing.
It was the pre-World Cup.
See, I think the longer it goes on, the more people are starting jonesing for football.
Getting,
you know, cold turkey.
Okay. Amon312 says, I thought I'd post something about the Confederations Cup. Someone has to. I wonder if the Potters think there'll be one in 4 years' time in Qatar. FIFA will hold the World Cup in Qatar, says Amon312. In the winter of 2022, but surely they can't do that with the Confederations Cup in the winter of 2021. Well, no, apparently not. What they're going to do is give it to another Asian qualifying group nation, and Qatar, assuming it's still there, will instead get to host probably the World Clubs Cup in December of that 2021 year.
Mm. But I think there's also talk about not maybe keeping the current format. The no new format has been suggested, so maybe it's going to just die a death.
Perhaps. Anyway, there was quite good goals in the game I saw, the Portugal-Mexico game, and you quite enjoyed that Cameroon-Chile game as it wore on.
And Germany was actually quite a good game as well. Because
the Australia match, yeah.
But Australians were suicidal. I mean, 3-2-4-1 against this Germany team were extraordinary. But it was quite interesting. People, different sort of media were trying to work out the German formation, and only the Germans definitively went that they were playing 3-3-2-2, because Hector effectively, who many people, I think, in British media thought was playing left-back, was actually covering the whole side, overlapping from Draxler. And Brandt, from further up the pitch, was doing a similar thing on the right. So it was sort of a 3-5-2.
Hmm.
Also, you know, I think there was words, you know, like, oh, youthful German side. They're not actually that useful. Average age of starting lineup yesterday was 25. Hmm. So they're those guys, I think, between under-21s and the main team. But they only averaged 12.5 caps between them. So it was basically an inexperienced Germany side. And if you look at someone like, I think it was Wagner who played up front, and he's 29, and Stindl is 28. So they are those guys kind of on the fringes. They might get in next year, they might not. Having said that, I thought the way Germany played was significantly less controlled than the recent German sides. It was not so much about possession, it was more about running up and down Bundesliga style sort of thing. So quite interesting. And also worth pointing out that Bernd Leno, he of German-Russian parents, I think they lived somewhere nearby before they moved to Germany in Napa, had an absolute stinker. Two terrible errors first not so terrible, second one definitely terrible errors. And there is talk of him being dropped now.
Really?
So,
well, Germany up against Chile next when the next set of Confederations Cup fixtures comes around. That's on Thursday, same day Cameroon will be taking on Austria. Let's take a little break there, shall we, listener? And then we'll be back with one of the more significant things that's come up over the last week, and that is Cristiano Ronaldo and his taxes. Dr. Sid on the other line at the moment. He's going to be with us very shortly. So, Sasha, in the meantime, you're excited about Linfield Celtic.
So they did the draw for the first and second round of Champions League and
already?
Europa League on Monday.
Huh.
And in the first round, Linfield will play a team from San Marino, La Florida.
Right.
Whom they should beat. But in the next round, they are due to play Celtic at Windsor Park on the 11th of July, which is a day before the 12th.
Right. Okay.
The 12th, the marching.
This is Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland, Belfast.
Yeah.
Celtic visiting.
All right.
I went to a Linfield game once and went to play football in Belfast about 4 years ago. And this was a Europa League qualifier against Skoda Zanti. 2,500 people in the ground. We went on the cop behind the goal. In my life, I have not heard so much offensive stuff ever. There was about the IRA, the Pope, Bobby Sands, everything. 2,500 people. It was the most hateful atmosphere ever. 2 years later, that stand developed cracks instead of threatening to fall down. I think it's because of the hate. And it was, we walked out, there was three of us, we walked out of the ground going, what have we just heard? Yeah. And this was just the Europa League qualifier. I don't know if they play Cliftonville, what's it like? So if they play Celtic now during the marching season, I think police are going to be a little bit stretched. I think there was a suggestion to switch the game to Glasgow, but then Linfield are fearing that they won't sell out the return leg if they get battered out in Glasgow. So, yeah, I think that's one to keep an eye out for.
Wow, that's extraordinary. I'm not really sure what to say about that. Best of luck to all concerned. There's no obvious solution for what they could do about it.
Well, I think they should probably be switching the game because the tensions run quite high when there's people marching around all the streets of Belfast dressed in orange at that time.
Right.
And then sort of dies down a bit. Celtic did play Cliftonville there about 4 years ago, a few days after, you know, the peak has passed and it was okay.
Yeah.
But I think the police at the moment are a little bit concerned.
Right.
I think I saw someone suggest, I don't know if it's total pie in the sky or whatever, that the game could possibly be switched to Dublin, to the Aviva Stadium, because they'd probably fill it, but then Linfield would lose their home advantage. I suppose it's kind of up to them and up to UEFA, really. But, yeah, it could get pretty ugly, and it couldn't be at a worse time of year.
No. Now, other news that's come up this week, we'll be talking about Ronaldo very shortly. He's not the only one agitating for a move. Dani Alves he's told Juve that he wants to leave, and he's got no intention of backtracking, which is certainly a feature of his game, I think you find it. As well as Man City may well discover, because it looks like they're the likeliest to stump up $5 million for the Brazilian fullback services. I say fullback, wingback might be a fairer description. The man who, indeed, created more chances than any other defender in the Champions League last season. Is that going through? Have you done rumour mill today or anything, Barry?
No, I haven't
done rumour mill today.
You did, Simon?
I did.
And what did it say?
It says that he is trying to negotiate a free transfer out of Juventus and links him also with Chelsea. But obviously his history with Guardiola and his extremely positive previous comments about Guardiola would strongly suggest that that's a more likely destination. But yeah, he is linked with Chelsea. Conte is apparently very close to agreeing a new contract with Chelsea.
All right.
And will stay there, and they will eventually start shopping. But still to come.
Okay. Well, Alves, in the meantime, has done his best to ease his exit from Turin by publicly telling Dybala he has to leave the club and also tweeting pictures of the boots he wore when he beat Juventus playing for Barcelona in the Champions League final a few years
ago. Why has it gone so sour?
I'm not sure, because it was all sweetness and light until a short time ago. Oh, Sasha, I wish I had an answer for you.
But I thought he was very happy.
He seemed really happy until they lost that Champions League final.
I'm going to say something very unhelpful at this point.
Good.
I was just looking at the Gazetta, and they said that this had looked on the cards from the moment that Juventus lost in Cardiff.
Right.
And I'm guessing that the next paragraph after that one would have explained why that's the case.
Okay. Well, next time we'll have a read of that. Yep. Juve also set to lose their other Brazilian flying wing-back fellow, Alexandro, because Chelsea very much in for him, assuming that they do eventually get around to some of that shopping business.
Yeah.
All right. Well, he'd be a terrific signing, significantly younger, of course. Also on their way out of glorious Serie A, possibly, one Gigi Donnarumma. Dave Whelan is my hero. Donnarumma, Donnarunna from Milan, says Dave Whelan is my hero. Too bad this happened too late today. Would like to hear AC Jimbo's thoughts. Well, this was his announcement after our show on Friday that he was heading out the door after previously pretty much committing to staying at Milan, kissing the badge, all that sort of thing. But then Mino Raiola, who's his agent, not uncoincidentally, has said that the club haven't treated him fairly. He's accused Milan of trying to bully Donnarumma into signing a new deal, and there's absolutely no way he's going to do that. And Real Madrid look poised to do it. Apparently that's where Gigi wants to go. The feeling is, though, that this is not so much about Milan bullying Donnarumma, but more about Raiola's A, percentage, potentially, if he moves, B, the fact that he maybe has doubts about the long-term soundness of Milan's plans, given that they have been bought by a Chinese guy who had to borrow all his money from a fairly aggressive hedge fund. And C, the fact that that Mino Raiola really doesn't like, apparently, the new guy in charge of player acquisitions and contracts at Milan, their DS, a guy called Mirabelli, who forced out the previous incumbent, the legendary Adriano Galliani, that kind of Dr. Evil-looking fellow who used to sit there morosely in the stands. And he was a big friend of Raiola's, so there's apparently that's what's driving all of this. It's a tremendous shame for Milan, I think, and for Italian football if he does leave, but it's not the end of the world. I mean,
it's just got really messy.
Mm.
It's overt now, it's not hidden. Raiola's invited a few Italian TV journalists into his flat in Monte Carlo to explain the situation to them.
Yeah, he had a round table with them, and then they all got interviews which they had to release at the exact same moment. But it was like a new series of Homeland or something. They all dropped at the same time on Sunday evening.
And Italian fans throwing dollar bills at Donnarumma.
Yeah.
And it's just everyone's falling out with everybody else.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, this was during Italy's under-21 game on the Sunday with Denmark. Donnarumma there between the posts and Italy fans, as you say, throwing fake dollar bills at him.
Hmm.
We shall see. We shall see. Conte, then, we think, is staying on at Chelsea. Yeah?
Yeah, looks that way.
What's happening at Sunderland, Barry? Here's username. He says, Sunderland being rejected by Aberdeen's manager. Is this a new low?
I don't think it's a low. I think he rejected them because there's so much uncertainty over who the new owners were going to be, and he was concerned with some justification that if he took the job, new owners took over the club, they would want their own man in his place.
All right, fair enough.
Sunderland released a statement saying as much on their website, as saying that because of the uncertainty over the ownership issue, they're unable to make any promises to managers they're trying to recruit about future transfer dealings, or I mean really anything about the future, and which is making it impossible to recruit. So don't expect a new manager anytime soon. They're going to try to their best to push through a deal for the club, and should that not happen within a certain time frame that would make it feasible to attract a manager and get a team in place for next season, they'll call off the wholesale thing and continue with Ellis Short, I suppose.
Yeah, and who is manager?
Well, and then they'd be able to sign a manager because the future in the boardroom would be settled for the time being.
Well, at least they're trying to be transparent about it. Last year, Hull just didn't do anything. He didn't say anything and ended up with no team.
Mm.
So, I mean, there's a German consortium in Sunderland, but they're not offering the amount of money that Ellis Short wants. And then Miguel Delaney had an exclusive in The Independent yesterday that a consortium led by three Sunderland fans called Fullwell 73, which is a film and TV production company, mm-hmm. who made the Class of 92, actually, among mm-hmm. many other things. I think the Westlife documentary, very successful. I think James Corden is recently become a partner.
Oh, really?
Yes, but yeah. Anyway, and they produce his show in the States. But they are now interested in taking over the club. I mean, they've lost Pickford to Everton, got 30 million for him, Jermaine Defoe to Bournemouth. Is that a done deal yet? But it will be, almost certainly, if it isn't already. And then they've released John O'Shea, Jan Kirchhoff, Victor Anichebe, Seb Larson, Stephen Pienaar, Will Buckley. Loan players like A9, Januzaj and Jason Denayer are going back to their clubs, so they're a pretty threadbare squad. I think O'Shea and Larson may be offered new deals, but whether or not they accept them is another matter.
There was a story in The Star today suggesting that Tony Adams is involved in a consortium also bidding for Sunderland.
That's the full is that the same one? Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Barry?
Pardon?
How do you feel about that?
I would not feel terrible about it. I don't think Tony Adams is a particularly good manager, but I don't think he's the clown some people portray him to be.
What else did you turn up in your rumour milling this morning? Titillator, some.
So Matic is probably leaving Chelsea.
Oh, yeah?
Essentially, Conte has a kind of list of positions that he wants to improve on, four or five positions that he thinks he can do better in, and the incumbents in those positions may end up departing. Matic has been linked this morning with Manchester United, who would like a new defensive midfielder, and I think have Eric Dier as their number one choice, but Matic below it. The story earlier this summer was that Mourinho had handed...
So they'll go with Dier or to Matic. That'll be where the choice is.
Indeed.
Sorry, yeah. That was quite hard work for very little return.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mourinho handed
the auto message for the people.
Yeah. Sorry, Simon. Yeah.
So Mourinho handed a shopping list to whoever's in charge of player recruitment at Manchester United earlier this year. That, according to like widespread transport newspaper gossip, had five players for each position he wants to recruit into, and Matic was on that list when it was handed over in May.
Mm. All right. And is John Terry going to Swansea?
So John Terry is being linked at the moment with Birmingham,
right?
Which we knew a few days ago. Obviously, Harry Redknapp is in charge there, so some intent to wheel a dealer in is in store with Swansea and also with Aston Villa. Hmm. He and his agent have apparently been playing golf with Steve Bruce in Portugal.
Right.
They have played at least two rounds of golf together,
right,
and therefore he might go there.
Wow, okay. In other exciting news from the continent, well, it looks like Juve today, Tuesday, may tie up a deal, a €40 million deal for Douglas Costa out of Bayern Munich, who might see his place, being taken by Alexis Sanchez, erstwhile of Arsenal, or currently still of Arsenal. And Parma have now, the club that's gone bankrupt twice in the last decade, have now continued their rise back from the fourth tier by winning promotion to the second division, Serie B in Italy. I don't know if you saw, there was a lovely little pre-game speech by Alessandro Lucarelli, captain, 39 years old, but still the captain of Parma, in which he said, basically, this is it for me, lads. I don't know if we'll ever be here again. It's now. We've been eating shit all year. Sorry about that. Now it's time to go out there and make them. It's all very stirring stuff. And they did. They went out and beat Alessandria and they're back in Serie B, which is going to be really interesting next year because you've got Pippo Inzaghi's Venezia. Yeah. And, Parma, Foggia, loads of names from back in the day, Bari, Perugia.
The ones that used to be in Serie A and never got into trouble.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yes,
actually. My piece of transfer news, Anthony Modest going to China from FC Köln.
I hope he's not a goalkeeper because many listeners have written in to tell us you can't sign foreign goalkeepers if you're a Chinese club. Of course, Modest's not a goalkeeper.
He's not a goalkeeper, but another story from China. Did you see Oscar kicking the ball at people in the middle of the park?
I did. And the brawl is a little bit, given that it's China, given the number of people involved, I was a bit disappointed at the lack of high kicking 360 degree frozen time.
21st century footballers.
Yeah. It wasn't the Shaolin football experience that I was hoping for, Sasha.
But I think they had a man sent off each.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Just the one?
Yeah, just the one.
Just going back, though, to Modest, that's quite a surprising move given his success in the Bundesliga last year. He's not that old.
He's 29, paying, what, €35 million for him?
But he was top scorer, wasn't he, in the Bundesliga last year?
I think West Ham just couldn't match what the Chinese were offering. And from Köln's point of view, €35 million for a 29-year-old striker who had a breakout season, probably could make sense.
Okay, all right. Simon, what happened in the League Cup draw?
Well, the League Cup draw took place and it was all perfect and very much fine. But then they printed graphics of who had been drawn against whom and they got them all wrong. I mean, perhaps not all of them, but many of them were wrong. People given wrong opponents, people given opponents they couldn't possibly have got given the seedings, Charlton given two opponents. It was all a bit of a mess.
And this was done in Thailand?
The draw was done in Thailand because of the new sponsors of the League Cup.
Right.
Who are based there.
Okay.
And whose name I can't remember.
That's an exciting development.
They should have obviously got Donald Trump in. You remember he did the quarterfinal draw in 91-92.
With St. and Greavesy.
Yep.
Right, okay. Well, time now for us to take another little break and then we're going to dial up Sid Lowe. Is the sweet sound of Dr. Sid in España.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hola. We're all good at this end, Sid. We're just loving this almost unexpected little post-season postscript of football.
You're loving it.
Loving it.
I thought you might be thinking, can we stop this now?
No. Quite the opposite. As I sat on my sofa on Sunday, unable to move because of the stifling heat, my eyes were at least diverted by the sight of young men gallivanting around the fields of Russia. But that's not the only football that's been going on. Of course, there's under-21s as well. And hey, that Spanish side looked pretty nifty, don't they? What was it, 5-0 against Macedonia? Asensio with a hat-trick.
Yeah, and it's a hell of a hat trick, isn't it? I mean, you know, all three goals are absolutely brilliant. And he's, you know, we've been saying this all season, and admittedly hasn't had perhaps as much continuity as he would have liked. But I actually think he's probably played more than he might have expected back at Real Madrid. But he's going to be an absolutely brilliant player. Scored the first goal of the season for Real Madrid, scored the last goal of the season for Real Madrid, scored in his debut now in the European Under-21 Championship, scored in his debut in the Copa del Rey, his debut in the league, his debut in the Champions League, his debut in the European Super Cup. And he's a pretty tasty player.
Lovely goal as well from Sal Niguez. Overhead kick, although not quite as nice perhaps as the Pellegrini, the Lorenzo Pellegrini cracker in Italy's 2-0 defeat of Denmark on the Sunday.
I didn't see that. Was that good?
Oh, lovely. But Sid, you know what? You hinted there about Asensio maybe getting a little bit more game time next season at Real Madrid, which brings us on to the big story, I imagine, there in the Spanish capital, and that's what's going on with Cristiano Ronaldo. Can you break it down for us, Doctor?
Let's try and make it as simple as possible. Monday morning, A Bola, Portuguese newspaper, runs with a headline that says Cristiano Ronaldo wants to abandon Spain. The context here, of course, being that A Bola is a paper that was very, very close to Jorge Mendes and Cristiano Ronaldo's agent. And the story essentially is that Ronaldo feels let down by Spain, by, if you like, the kind of the country, because of the accusations of tax evasion, let down by Real Madrid as a club as well for not having defended him sufficiently in it. And I suspect actually a little bit deeper than just not having defended him, as somehow being partly culpable for the situation. At first, I must admit, my initial reaction was, well, yeah, whatever, this doesn't feel like a big deal to me. But nobody denied it. Further stories then came out from either side. There was no denials from either side. Nothing was actually said publicly, which of course always gives you plausible deniability, the chance to kind of back away from the story if needs be. Yesterday, Florentino Perez was sworn in again as president of Real Madrid. He didn't say anything in his press conference. He won an election without any votes, and he went into a press conference without any questions. But last night he did do an interview on Spanish radio, and he said, I haven't spoken to Ronaldo yet. I'm going to speak to Ronaldo. He's clearly annoyed about something. We'll find a solution. He said, I am not contemplating the possibility of Ronaldo leaving, but he said during the interview that he's not contemplating lots of things that he very clearly is contemplating. I think this has got some legs. I don't know how it'll end, because it's a very difficult one to find a really clear solution for. But this isn't just the kind of thing that just goes away.
Some people have suggested that he's doing this in order to gain a little bit of leverage over the Spanish government, i.e. that public opinion will be so firmly against the idea of him being chased out by the tax authorities that they would accept any kind of deal for him to stay.
Yeah, I mean, there was a suggestion of that, although literally in the last, I mean, you probably have not seen this because you've been in the studio, literally kind of 5-10 minutes ago, the story's broken that he's going to be called to declare before the judge as a imputado, what do you call that in English? As a suspect, I suppose, is the word.
Well, imputado would be charged, literally, no?
He's being
accused.
The person who's being charged, the accused, right, that's the word I'm looking for. I can't speak English anymore, Jim, but...
Sid, you can.
And so that if that was the tactic, it's not working. If it was the tactic, it's also not working in terms of people's attitudes, because I think what's happened is that rather than people go, no, don't force him out, there's been a kind of sense of, well, come on, you know, this isn't on. I must admit, I thought that at first as well, that there was a potential for this being just kind of a little bit of pressure. You know, is this what you really want? One of your star players to leave the country. I think there's also a sense of it's pressuring Real Madrid, saying, you know, you have to take responsibility for this. You have to look after me on this. And Florentino Perez, in the interview last night, one of the things he said was, it wouldn't make much sense for us to pay any, you know, hypothetical fine that Cristiano Ronaldo gets. And he said, and that is not what Cristiano Ronaldo wants, I'm sure. Now, I suspect actually he's saying that in part because he thinks it might be what Cristiano Ronaldo wants. As I say, he claims not to have spoken to Ronaldo yet, that he will do after Confederations Cup. He said there hasn't been a conversation with Jorge Mendes, which, to be honest, I think is frankly very, very difficult to believe. And a lot of what he said was not really that plausible.
See,
I think what he did basically was try and buy time last night and put the ball back in Ronaldo's court. If he goes, it's important from Real Madrid's point of view, I think, to say, well, it's him abandoning us. It wasn't us that did this.
Yeah, Sid, if he goes, it might not be the end of the world for Real Madrid. He's 32 years old. He'll probably be the most expensive transfer sale ever. And it's not like they're short of other options.
No, and we started with this with Asensio, didn't we? And I think that's right. Look, Look, in a way, I mean, I actually think that this is going to sound a bit daft, but I think Real Madrid are in a really quite a good position here. And I don't actually think they're particularly worried about it. I mean, it's an uncomfortable position to be in, and it's a position that they probably didn't want to be in, certainly not yet. But, of course, if a player retires at your club, you don't get any money for him. If you can sell a player, admittedly, the back end of the season was brilliant. So, you know, the fact that he's 32, you say, well, yeah, but the way he finished last season, he was probably their best player, was absolutely decisive in the key games, in the quarters, semis and final of the Champions League. But if at this stage of his career they could get the kind of enormous fee that enables them to, say, buy Mbappe, for example, have other players come through and play more often, and then I actually think the solution is not necessarily a bad one for Real Madrid.
Right. Where would he go, do you think, Sid, if he is going to go?
Well, this is the problem. Who can pay the kind of fee that Real Madrid would want, the kind of salary that he would want? One of the stories that's come out, again, none of these stories have been denied. That's not necessarily to say they're absolutely 100% true, but one of the stories that come out has been him saying to Mendes, get me back into United. Now, I suppose United could spend that kind of money. I think it's a big, big thing for them to think about, whether he fits in, how well he fits in, what it is that they, what kind of role it is they want it to play. Because there's no doubt, for a couple of years, I think he would be, at least a couple of years, maybe more, because he looks after himself so well, he would be absolutely brilliant. And you know, there's an emotional connection there. It seems to me that Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester United feel like the only really plausible exit strategies to me. But that's kind of speculative on my part.
Sid, what is Ronaldo's relationship with Jose Mourinho like? I thought he wasn't a fan, and I would suspect that he's not too keen on the weather in Manchester. He's said that before as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean,
it's hotter than in Madrid. You know,
Well, it's not hotter. I got in the car yesterday, and admittedly, a car is a heat trap, right? But I got in the car the other day, turned the engine on, and the temperature thing popped up. He said 48.5. So it's pretty hot in Madrid at the moment.
Oh, okay, fair enough, Sid.
I hope you don't leave Estella in there with the windows closed.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. No, she's driving normally, she's the one with the keys. So Cristiano, I mean, obviously he knows that about Manchester. I don't suppose that's a really major problem, at least for a short-term deal, given the scenario here. The other thing, of course, is if you leave Spain because of the tax thing, the tax case doesn't go away. You know, that tax case is still there. Admittedly, it's true that you're not confronted by it every day. I think United would be a good solution from his point of view. And obviously, there's still the possibility that this just doesn't get done, and that there's kind of a, because this is one of the reasons why no one's talking publicly, of course, because it enables you to kind of back away from it all if needs be. But anyway, the question was about Mourinho, wasn't it? Sorry, we've gone off on a massive long tangent. The way it's been explained to me is that the relationship with Mourinho did break down pretty badly towards the end of his time at Real Madrid, but that wouldn't be, at least on the face of it, at least, you know, kind of to start with, that wouldn't be a problem in terms of him going to United.
What about Luka Modric? Is he going to run away from Spain too after being charged with perjury in Croatia?
Yeah, this is a really curious one, isn't it? I mean, this is a kind of a step again. And obviously, I'm not really in a position to sort of fully understand the full ramifications of this, but it does look very, very serious.
Well, yeah, potentially 5 years in Croatian jail. How worried are the Real about this?
Well, to tell you the truth, no one's even talked about it. Because, of course, the focus has all been on Cristiano Ronaldo. And last night, I mean, to give you an example, last night, this big interview that Florentino Perez did was easily an hour and a half long on one of the Spanish radio stations. It started at kind of 11:30. I think he was still talking at pretty much 1 o'clock in the morning. Loads of Ronaldo, a little bit of Bale, loads of James, and, well, not loads, but a good chunk on James and Morata. Nothing said about Modric at all.
What is all this Modric business then, Barry?
Well, Luka was a key witness in the trial of a chap called Zdravko Mamić, who is...
Is that how you pronounce that, Sasha?
I think as well. I don't know his first name, but Mamić, definitely Mamić.
Okay.
Zdravko Mamić, who is a former chief executive of Dynamo Zagreb, and he's on trial for embezzlement, fraud, I think tax evasion as well. And the particular aspect of the trial which pertains to Modric dates back to the time he moved from Dynamo Zagreb to Spurs in 2008. And the fee was agreed half of which went to Modric. And he was then forced to hand over almost all of that, 90% of that half, to Mamić. And there's no dispute that, and Mamić now stands accused of basically stealing that money from Dynamo Zagreb. So there is no dispute that he got the money, but what is in dispute is a sort of annex in the contract, which the prosecution claim was backdated after the deal was struck. And Modric has basically said that this is what happened originally in his statement, and then in court he did a complete U-turn and now stands accused of perjury. What? So there's suggestions that perhaps he may have been, inverted commas, persuaded to change his story by Mamić, who is a man of such influence in Zagreb that his trial was moved out of the city because it was felt he was too close to a lot of the judges and politicians in the capital. And now the public have turned on Modric. There's slogans criticising him going up, you know, graffiti being daubed in various places, including a hotel where his family lived when they first went to the country as immigrants. And yeah, it's not looking good for him at all. He's been charged with perjury, and should he be found guilty, he could get up to 5 years in prison.
Wow. It's remarkable, isn't it?
I'm picturing the Ecuadorian embassy having a pretty good first 11 within a couple of years' time.
The other thing that we really perhaps would like to talk about, and indeed here's Dan Mallett requesting that we do so, 30-minute halves. This from IFAB, who've come up with quite interesting list of suggestions about rule changes or law changes in football, allowing free kicks and corners to be dribbled, the awarding of penalty goals when a handball prevents a goal being scored, and the biggest of all being reducing football matches to 60 minutes, which in practice wouldn't make that much difference to the duration, because actual game time at the moment is, it hovers around just under, I think,
56 or something.
Yeah. So having a 60-minute game time and you stop the clock whenever there's a stoppage of play.
Well, I'm in favour of the idea of 60-minute games, because I do genuinely think in this world when everyone's on Twitter and social media while watching games, attention spans are getting shorter and shorter, and 90 minutes is just too long for games, I think. I think hour-long games would be a welcome tonic. But if you're going to be stopping the clock all the time, we'd end up having to invest more time, because I think the suggestion is there'd be more ad breaks. We would be entering into the realms of the unwell. But I'd be wholeheartedly in favour of
a 60-minute game
the way 90-minute games
certainly make my weekend schedule much easier. That's a very good point, Barry. No, but as you say, if they're going to stop the game clock, that absolutely gives them the potential to then monetize those stoppages.
I mean, they do this in rugby now, and there was, I think one of the Six Nations game, there was farcical scenes where it took, I think, 23 minutes to play the last minute of one of the Six Nations games.
But they're not talking about extending the stoppages, just not counting them on the official match clock.
But once you stop a match clock, I think what Barry's suggesting is that once there is that possibility,
you may as well,
we stopped it for that, and let's chuck in an advert before you start the clock again.
How long do American football games take these days? They seem to last, what, 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
So, well, we're going towards that with football.
Well, possibly. But, of course, you know, different sport, different approach to the whole match day experience, I would say. Breaking news of everybody. This just in from producer Ben. Turns out Cristiano Ronaldo's tax case is not an isolated incident. Spanish fiscal authorities have just opened up proceedings against Jose Mourinho. And on that bombshell, that's where we come to the end of this week's Guardian Football podcast. When will we be back? We'll be back on Friday. We'll be talking about all the exciting things that have happened between now and then, literally. Do get your questions in if there's something you want us to discuss, and we'll be happy to do so, more than happy in the circumstances.
I thought you were going to fill me in on Craig David's performances at the weddings of several Premier League footballers.
Is it several now?
Two
back-to-back footballer wedding gigs.
Who were the lucky players?
Phil Jones
yes.
was the first.
Right.
Who surprised his wife with a Craig David live performance.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jack Wilshere was the second, yes.
So you had Phil Jones on Saturday, Jack Wilshere on Sunday, and then presumably chilled on
But I checked
Monday.
This. Jack Wilshere's wife is 25.
Yes.
So she would have been...
No idea who...
Seven.
Yeah.
When Craig David was famous first time round.
Yeah, but now he's back and he's a valid... You know, he's become a...
Mm.
Yeah. So who would play at your wedding, Barry? Were you to tie the knot?
It's a very good question. Ooh, God, I don't know.
If you're a recording artist listener,
yeah,
do write in and volunteer your services, because Barry's very much open to... what did you want to say?
I was going
to
say that all these guys have a long way to go before they reach the level of Said Guteriev. He was the son of a Russian... Well, he was the son of an oligarch from former Soviet Union, who in March 2016 had a wedding that cost over $1 billion.
No.
So in Moscow, they had playing J-Lo, Sting and Enrique Iglesias, and then apparently they jetted to London for a private gig with Elton John and Beyonce.
So, jeepers.
Take that, footballers.
Take that?
I don't think they know take that in the former Soviet Union.
Really?
Didn't reach that far.
Explains so much. All right, super. Simon, anything you want to add at this point? Should we let Barry get to his Ascot biz?
I think it would be just... It would be only fair.
Anyway, we're back on Friday, so do make sure you join us then, because there's nothing else to do in this post-season wilderness. Have yourselves a great time in the meantime. Cheerio for now.
The Guardian.